A silver McLaren races down a Rio highway. The impact is brutal, instantaneous. Limbs torn from body, chest split open. Wanderson Pereira dos Santos, a cyclist, dies on the road. Behind the wheel, Thor Batista, 20-year-old son of Brazil's richest man. Within months, Thor is back racing Ferraris. Wanderson is buried in a simple ceremony, forgotten. This isn't just tragedy. It's a mirror reflecting Brazil's soul. In this country of 200 million, justice wears different faces for different people. Wealth doesn't just buy comfort, it purchases immunity, opportunity, even life itself. This collision captures something essential about modern Brazil, a nation where extreme inequality isn't a bug in the system, but a fundamental feature, where the distance between penthouse and favela measures not just meters, but entire universes of possibility. Walk through any Brazilian city and you're navigating an invisible web of billionaire ownership. That gleaming hotel? The Cialis pharmaceutical dynasty? Those ubiquitous pharmacies? Francisco de Osmar de Queiroz empire? Even the subway traces back to construction giants like Camargo Correa and Odebrecht families, whose wealth dwarfs flashier billionaires but who prefer operating in shadows. Brazilian entrepreneurship differs fundamentally from Silicon Valley mythology. There's no garage to glory narrative here. Success flows through relationships, not disruption. Sociologist Sergio Buarque de Holanda called this the cordial man. Brazilians prize personal connections over impersonal institutions. It manifests as warm informality, but also as, for my friends, anything, for my enemies, the law. This isn't modern corruption, it's colonial inheritance. Brazil's first business elite were slave traffickers who bribed officials, establishing traditions where rules existed para inglês ver, for foreigners to see. Researchers estimate 50 to 90% of political campaign spending comes from Caixa Dois, the second cash register for bribes. Brazil has specialized vocabulary. Testa de ferro for frontmen, rabo preso for political mutual protection, scandals that end in pizza when they die in bureaucracy. The Belo Monte Dam consumed enough concrete for 48 Maracana stadiums and steel for 16 Eiffel Towers. Patrimonialist perfection, government ownership, construction by private giants, guaranteed revenue without risk. The Juruna tribe's sustainable fish economy vanished overnight. A 2009 environmental study predicted severe damage, but was ignored for studies from financially interested parties. Two consecutive IBAMA directors resigned rather than approve construction, an unprecedented protest. Norte Energia's promised billion-dollar protection plan became $15,000 monthly per village. This cash destroyed what the dam couldn't, villages divided to multiply payments, agriculture abandoned for processed foods, diabetes and hypertension soaring. Alternatives existed. Professor Celio Berman showed sugarcane biomass could generate energy equivalent to three Belo Monte dams. Modernizing aging grids could recover 15% of lost electricity, roughly Belo Monte's entire output. But distributed solutions lacked political appeal. Large dams offered concentrated patronage, dramatic ceremonies, campaign photographs, advantages alternative energy couldn't match. Roberto Mourinho inherited his father's newspaper at 21 and built a media empire that dominated Brazil for half a century. By the 1980s, Globo averaged 80% ratings. Imagine one network controlling nearly everything Americans watched. His complexity defied categorization. An anti-communist who protected his communist employees, joking, "Nobody messes with my communists." He supported the 1964 military coup, yet championed American-style journalistic objectivity. When censors canceled his novella after 36 episodes, he denounced censorship because it hurt profits, not principles. His power peaked during Brazil's democratic transition when he backed opposition candidate Tancredo Neves, who let Mourinho approve cabinet picks in return. In 1989's first free presidential election in decades, Globo edited debate footage to favor his candidate Kohler over Lula, showing only Kohler's best moments, Lula's worst. Kohler won, then proved disastrous, freezing savings accounts, triggering recession, facing impeachment. Mourinho's three sons inherited both empire and convictions, opposing wealth taxes while benefiting from government advertising. Adir Macedo, barely 5 feet tall with deformed hands, transforms into a commanding presence before followers. In Belo Horizonte, he told 5,000 people that America's prosperity came from Protestant tithing, unlike Brazil's retrograde Catholic culture. When you start tithing faithfully, you're changing your situation. The crowd roared, "Amen." Born prematurely in 1945, one of 17 children, 10 died in infancy, Macedo worked from age 11. After his daughter was born with a cleft lip, he dedicated himself to Jesus at 32, quitting his government job to preach in a park gazebo. His services brilliantly synthesized Brazil's religious traditions, Catholic ritualism energized with Pentecostal ecstasy, reframing candomblé spirits as biblical demons he could exorcise. The Universal Church operates like a franchise with themed services. Thursdays, love therapy. Friday, for miraculous healings. During Holy Bonfires campaigns, pastors urge bold donations, cars, houses, even children. One woman surrendered her two-week-old baby, whom Macedo adopted. In leaked footage, he instructs pastors, "Demand, demand, demand." Yet the church offers practical improvement, encouraging concrete goals, financial discipline, networking opportunities. For many poor Brazilians, it fills gaps the state leaves empty. Ike Batista cultivated devoted followers who adopted X's in their Twitter handles. His best-selling book promoted 360-degree vision, a comprehensive approach illustrated with atom-like diagrams connecting concepts like financial engineering and perseverance, centered around an Incan sun symbolizing supernatural power. He embraced superstition, inserting his lucky number 63 into all OGX oil block bids. By March 2012, his fortune approached $30 billion, ranking 10th globally. He owned a $42 million yacht, three jets totaling $84 million, and over $100 million in Rio real estate. Yet he remained fixated on overtaking Carlos Slim, reportedly challenging him, "Te voy a pasar, I'm going to pass you." Despite meritocratic posturing, Ike leveraged political connections. He donated $400,000 to Rio Governor Sergio Cabral's re-election, offering unlimited jet access. In return, Cabral granted millions in tax credits and expedited permits. His oil wells produced only 5,000 barrels daily, far below the promised 20,000. Engineers had misinterpreted geology. Instead of continuous reservoirs, they found disconnected pockets requiring more wells and higher costs. On June 26, 2012, OGX disclosed these problems. Shares plunged 25%, triggering domino effects across his empire. In October 2013, OGX filed for bankruptcy with $5.1 billion in debt, Latin America's largest corporate bankruptcy. He'd lost approximately $34 billion in 16 months, becoming a cultural reference for spectacular failure. What began as protests over a 20-cent bus fare increase evolved into nationwide demonstrations, bringing millions to streets across 100 cities. Journalist Ricardo Bochat called it like an atomic bomb after it explodes, flowing without owner, logic, or direction. Over half the population had internet access. Fewer than half had sewage lines. The protests sealed Ike's fate. When he desperately needed government support, politicians couldn't risk appearing beholden to special interests. His credibility collapsed when filings revealed he'd secretly sold $60 million in OGX shares while publicly declaring confidence, directly contradicting his promise to invest $1 billion. Despite catastrophic collapse, Ike demonstrated the peculiar resilience of the ultra-wealthy. While creditors seized his companies and he reported $10 billion in losses, he maintained Ferraris and his Rio mansion. His Emirates backers continued paying $5 million annually, proving that owing billions makes you untouchable. The distance between Thor's McLaren and Wanderson's bicycle wasn't just economic. It was the distance between two Brazils occupying the same space but living in different realities. Extreme wealth and extreme poverty are two sides of the same coin, built on foundations of collective labor and public subsidy.